গিরিবালাধারে গোপীজনাবালাভা গিরিবালাধারে গিরিবালাধারে যশোরনন্দনা যশোরনন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন যামুনা তীরবন ছাড়ি যামুনা তীরবন ছাড়ি রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি গোপীজনা বালাভা গিরিভর ধারে পেগড়া বালাভা গোপীজনা বালাভা গিরিভর ধারে গিরিবর ধারে যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন যামুনা তীরবনাচারি যামুনা তীরবনাচারি যায় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে জয় ওম বিষ্ণু পাদ পরমহংস হরি জগৎচার্য অষ্টতর সরস্বতী শ্রীমদ্ভাই গ্রেস শ্রী ভক্তি বেদান্ত স্বামী শ্রী প্রভুপাদ কি অনন্ত কোটি বৈষ্ণববৃন্দ কি গ্রন্থরাজ শ্রীমদ্ ভাগবতম কি গম্ভীর ভক্তবৃন্দ কি নিতায় গৌর প্রেমানন্দী অল গ্লোরিয়াস টু দি অ্যাসেম্বলড ডিভোটিস অল গ্লোরিয়াস টু শ্রী গুরু শ্রী গৌরাঙ্গ ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading text 23 this morning from chapter 26 Canto 5, one of the favorite chapters that give impetus to be very careful in devotional service, description of the hellish planets. Are you here on a student assignment taking photographs or something? Something like that? Huh? No? Kind of. Well, the reason I'm asking is what you're going to hear is a little shocking. Huh? Okay.
No problem then. Little preamble. The scriptures of the world that I'm familiar with, maybe all scriptures of the world, have at least this common shared picture of cosmology. There's where we are, and there's the good place, and there's the bad place. There's heaven, and there's hell, and there's where we are, and depending upon what we do during this life, we're going to go to the good place or the bad place. Some ideas like that. Now, the Vedic picture of cosmology is far more detailed. It gives descriptions, not only of the good place, but better than the good place and better than the better place. And then the transcendental place. In other words, a distinction between heaven and the kingdom of God, at least from the training that I received growing up in a Christian tradition, there was not at all a clear distinction between heaven and the kingdom of God. There was never any thought to make such a distinction. It's kind of like a blur. But the Vedic picture is very clear. There's heaven. It's a place that's created when the universe is created, and it's destroyed when the universe is destroyed, and the denizens of heaven similarly are populating the heavenly region, and when the universe is withdrawn, they're withdrawn. And there's planetary systems in this universe, in each universe, each of the many universes. That's another big distinction, but there's many planets that are planetary systems that are above heaven, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka, four divisions, and different qualities of life exist in each of those divisions above heaven. And that's still within the created realm. That's not the kingdom of God. Like last night, the Devi Dham, they're all within the Devi Dham, and above that, beyond the coverings of the universe, into the region of the spiritual sky is Mahesh Dham, at least one of the abodes of Lord Shiva. And then above Lord Shiva's Dham is Hari Dham, and above that is Goloka. So back into Devi Dham, there's heavenly regions, and there's the bad place, the hellish regions. And it's not just like a place. There's seven divisions of that place. And as you go down, it gets more severe and more severe and more severe and unbearably severe. So this is in a nice, robust place of somewhere in the middle region of the lower region. And it's not a nice place. And so, naturally, connected with the principle of we reap the fruits of our activities, karma, according to the nature of one's misdeeds, you go to an appropriate bad place. And that's what we're hearing about this morning, one of those places. Now, this is a verse in prose, meaning normally it's with a shloka that we can chant together. And this isn't like that. This is a prose one, and I'm really terrible at Sanskrit. I'll just read the first line of six lines. Ye tviha vai rajanya raja purusha va apakadha dharma setun, etc. And, oops, that's yesterday. Well, I'll read that one. A person, this is yesterday's verse, I assume. Maybe, who? Huh? Text 22 has no purport, so maybe this wasn't read yesterday. Here is the translation of 22, and we're going to read 23 with a purport. A person who is born into a responsible family, dash, such as a Kshatriya, or a member of royalty, or a government servant, dash, but who neglects to execute his prescribed duties according to religious principles, and who thus becomes degraded, falls down at the time of death into the river of hell, known as Vaitarani. Then it describes the river. This river, which is a moat surrounding hell, is full of ferocious aquatic animals. When a sinful man is thrown into the river Vaitarani, the aquatic animals there immediately begin to eat him. But because of his extremely sinful life, he does not leave his body. He constantly remembers his sinful activities and suffers terribly in that river, which is full of, is a very special kind of river, not like normal kind of a river, full of urine, stool, pus, blood, hair, nails, bones, marrow, flesh, and fat. No purport. Text 23 starts out similarly. Ye tveha vai vrishali patayo nashta shocha chara niyamas chakta laja pashu charyam. Charya means behavior and pashu means animal. Those who behave like animals, where nashta, it's destroyed, is shochara, shocha, their cleanliness, good behavior, following rules and regulations, without shame, chakta, laja, shameless animal-like people, there's another place for them. Purport. Out to verse, translation 23. The shameless husbands of low-born Shudras, Shudra women, live exactly like animals, and therefore they have no good behavior, cleanliness, or regulated life. After death, such persons are thrown into the hell called Puyoda, where they are put into an ocean filled with, same thing as that river, pus, stool, urine, mucus, saliva, and similar things. Shudras, who could not improve themselves, fall into that ocean and are forced to eat those disgusting things. Yuck. Purport. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung, Karma Kanda, Gyanakanda, Kevala Vishera Banda, Amrita Balia Yeba Kai, Nanayoni Sada Pire, Kadarye Bhakshane Bhakshana Kare, Tara Janma Ada Pate Yai. Prabhupada continues. Narottam Das Thakur says that persons following the paths of Karmakanda and Jnanakanda, parentheses, fruitive activities and speculative thinking, are missing the opportunities for human life and gliding down into the cycle of birth and death. Thus, there's always the chance that he may be put into the Puyoda Naraka, or the hell named Puyoda, where one is forced to eat stool, urine, pus, mucus, saliva, and other abominable things. It is significant that this verse is spoken especially about Shudras, If one is born a Shudra, he must continually return to the ocean of Puyoda to eat horrible things. Thus, even a born Shudra is expected to become a Brahmana. Semicolon. That is the meaning of human life. Everyone should improve himself. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanyam maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagashaha. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, four divisions of human society were created by me. Unquote. Even if one is by qualification a Shudra, he must try to improve his position and become a Brahmana. No one should try to check a person, no matter what his present position is, from coming to the platform of a Brahmana or a Vaishnava. Actually, one must come to the platform of a Vaishnava. Then he automatically becomes a Brahmana. This can be done only if the Krishna consciousness movement is spread, for we are trying to elevate everyone to the platform of Vaishnava. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, 1866, Sarva dharman parityaja mamikam sharanam braja. Abandoning all other duties and simply surrender unto me. One must give up the occupational duties of a Shudra, Kshatriya, or Vaishya and adopt the occupational duties of a Brahmana, which include the activities of a Brahmana. Krishna explained this in Bhagavad Gita 9:32. Mam hi partha yapashritya yapisyu papayonayaha. Sriyo vaishas tata shudras te piyanti param gatim. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishas, or merchants, as well as shudras, or workers, can approach the supreme destination. Unquote. Human life is specifically meant for going back home, back to Godhead. That facility should be given to everyone, whether one be a Shudra, Vaishya, woman, or Kshatriya. This is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. However, if one is satisfied to remain a Shudra, he must suffer as described in this verse. The last line is, Tat evati evati bibhasitam ashnantai, which means they eat extremely disgusting things, forced to eat extremely disgusting things. A few things in the verse, the characteristic of the persons described that have this not very nice destination are persons, two things. They live like animals and they do not improve themselves. And so the nature of, from a Vedic perspective, in any case, the nature of animal is, well, there's no control of the senses. In part, simply impetus to do something, and so they do something. Not obliged by regulation. Prabhupada gives the example, if a person walks across the street against a don't walk sign, they can get a summons. But a dog isn't going to get a summons. Or if you drive on the wrong side of the street, you'll get a summons. But a dog can move on the wrong side of the street and he doesn't get a summons. He's not regulated by state law. And similarly, you know, the other activities of an animal. The animal may eat whatever they eat or bark, you know, or whatever, you know, animals may do. And by state law and by karmic law, they're not bound. According to the Vedic picture, in the lower forms of life, there's no generating of fresh new karma, action-reaction types of things. The lion is not karmically punished for killing an animal for his food or her food, because that's the body that they receive, the impetus is there, and there's no karmic consequence. And rather, the opposite. They're fulfilling, or they're living out the karma that brought them that body, and then they're just, so there's no new karma. But if a human being barks, or, you know, eats, you know, kills animals, or does things that are, or whatever it is that's contrary to the codes of Dharma for that, for the human, then he's living like an animal. And the living like an animal person has an option. You don't have to live like an animal. You may be born according to karma with some tendency like that, or maybe even a family or a culture or whatever where anything goes. But one doesn't have to live like that. And so is the last part of the purport Prabhupada is pointing to, in the necessity of providing the means for elevation from those that know the means of elevation. It's likened sometimes to a place where there's an epidemic. And supposing you're a medical doctor and you know there's an epidemic, what do you do? Oh, I don't want to go to a place where there's an epidemic. I'm staying away from that academic place. Or one goes to that place, but before going to that place, you take some inoculation so you don't contract whatever that epidemic disease is, and then you administer the medicine. That's what doctors sometimes do. So similarly, the medicine to cure the misfortune of animal-like life is in the hands of some. Those who are trained have some knowledge and some sense of forbearance and discipline in their lives, know the means of relieving one of the undisciplined life. Now, part of the problem is those who are undisciplined commonly don't like discipline. I mean, not like with a stick discipline, just self-discipline. Just animals like being animals. And animal-like people like being animal-like people. They don't want just a little anecdote to illustrate this. Some years ago, I started visiting I visited a number of Ayurvedic clinics, and I found one that I particularly resonated with, so I started going to that Ayurvedic doctor on a regular basis. Got panchakarma a couple of times, and some relationship developed. And then gradually, this Ayurvedic doctor, just by his good work, was given the resources to make an Ayurvedic clinic. And he was building the Ayurvedic clinic and very happy. And so he took me to the place when it was not yet finished. You know, the whole tour from the top floor down and down, what goes on in each floor. And then in the basement was where they teach the Ayurvedic, you know, the administrators of the treatment. You know, the massage people and the whatever it is people. So they can do the Ayurvedic cure. And at the end, he stood there and with his wife next to me and said, you know, I'm convinced that Ayurveda is very powerful, and If someone has some imbalance that causes some disease, we can correct that problem and bring them to the position where, that again, their doshas are in balance and their health is restored. We can do that. But when they go out, they resume their own habits and they're back in the same condition again. The same condition that was caused by the habits that they had before they came here. So we can't change the habits. We can tell them. But without discipline, without, you know, connecting with a higher purpose of life, then he said, so we need you, you know, Vaishnavas that can teach people how to change the quality of their life. We can do this, but we can't do that. And so I said, well, we can do that, but I don't know if we can do this. So let's work together. But change of habit, or as the verse is speaking, improving themselves, improving oneself, has there, you know, there's all kinds of literature, self-help, that are very popular literatures. What are some of the best sellers? Self-help. But, you know, this speculation, that speculation, maybe 4 or 5 visits ago to Champaign-Urbana, I made a presentation on just a standard, I can't even remember what it was, some standard thing about karma and yoga, karma and meditation. And after the class, in questions, and after the class, one person, there were three young people that came up all at once. One of the young persons said, you know, I really like meditation, because I find it's really powerful. But I can't keep myself, can't keep my mind in that meditative state because it's restless and turbulent and, you know, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So do you have some recommendation what I should do? And before I got to speak, one of the other fellows said, oh, I found something online. They have this machine. You hook you up to the machine. And then, you know, it finds out wherever your da-da-da-da-da is. And then you can, like, fix your mind on whatever you want to fix your mind on. Oh, really? What's the website? And, you know, it's good for marketing, but at least, you know, stepping back, from a Vedic perspective, Dharma doesn't come from machines. Dharma comes from the Supreme. And when one accepts principles that come from the Supreme, then it's a natural, sustainable method of bringing one's self to the position of fixing the mind when you're meant to fix the mind. And there's procedures for that without detailing them. That's within the meditation process, built into it. There's the pranayama method that controls the life airs, prana, that are circulating within the body, the imbalance of which causes mental disease, the balance of which causes focus of the mind, or facilitates focus of the mind. But then there's a transcendental, not just a mechanical, because pranayama is mechanical, drilling the life airs within the body. Who knows even about life airs if you just go on the internet and find out about a machine that's going to help you do yada-da. But there's life airs that I don't know if a machine can help you with. Very nice verse from Rupa Goswami's Vidagdha Madhava. You know, many of you know the verse. The invocation verse to Vidagdha Madhava. I do not know how much nectar has been produced by the two syllables, Krishna. When one chants the holy name of Krishna, within the mouth, it appears that the holy name is dancing within one's mouth. And one desires many, many mouths. And when that sound of the holy name of Krishna enters within the ear, there is such nectar that one desires millions of ears. And when that holy name of Krishna enters within the chamber of the heart and is dancing within the courtyard of the heart, the mind becomes inert, and then the senses become inert, just from chanting in a quality way, where the holy name is dancing within the courtyard of one's heart. But before you can get that stage and thus control the mind, the other precede. Chanting with great attention, hearing with great attention, allowing the holy name, inviting the holy name within the heart, dancing within the courtyard of the heart. The activities of the mind become conquered. Yay! And the senses then become inert. So there is a process of bringing one whose mind is all over the place, agitated and disturbed and contemplating all kinds of abominable things and distracting things and distracted by the distraction of distractions, however many layers there are, too many. There's a very practical method. So the application of that medicine of the holy name, is very important for those who have the medicine to give the medicine. I mean, you don't have to. You can be a doctor that just keep medicine in your medicine bag and never use it, except for yourself. You can do that. But that's not the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like we were discussing yesterday. They understand his desire and feel the desire to be an instrument of his desire, and having the medicine, they administer the medicine. But first, before you administer the medicine, you have to take the inoculation. Otherwise, you might get, you know, infected by the epidemic disease, whatever it is, material existence. So here's the example of those who are born and live their lives like animals and don't do anything to improve, and there's not a nice consequence. Interesting, Prabhupada quotes this verse from a song by Narottam Das Thakur, where it starts, you know, some good things, karmakanda, gyanakanda. Kevala vishera banda. So the Vedas have these three divisions, karmakanda, gyanakanda, and upasana kanda, or bhagavat mark. And this is Vedic. This is like, you know, doing good things according to religious codes. But according to Narottam Das Thakur, we'll say, if the higher purpose of them is missing, that is, taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, if that's missing in those things, then kevala vishera bandha, they're but pots of poison or cups of poison. You don't drink pots of poison, you die. Amrita balya yeva kai. They're thinking them to be nectar. And I'll just give an example. This is now from my study of Sri Brahma Samhita. You know that nice verse about Durga, where she's Shristi Stati Pralaya Sadhana Shaktireka. She's very powerful, and she is the potency through which creation, maintenance, and destruction takes place. She's got She's got a hold on everybody at all phases of time. And the description in the purport is she has 10 arms. In each of the arms, there's a weapon. So it sounds like, you know, she's mean, better watch out. But those 10 arms are the 10 samskaras. What are the samskaras? They're rituals that are part of the karmakanda process where the soul is transmigrating and auspiciousness is created by doing those samskaras. And isn't it that, those of you that are from India, you know this, that those who do samskaras, they're pious. The brahmanas assist the people, it's like their livelihood, to perform samskaras. And people that do samskaras, they do these rituals. They're very, very pious people. And the intent is material prosperity by engaging themselves in pious activities. And they consider themselves and they're considered by others to be very pious people. However, Durga, the arms by which, in one of them, the first one Prabhupada describes as the trident, and she pierces them with the trident. The threefold miseries. And supposing, then Prabhupada describes, supposing one can then escape those threefold miseries, then you go to the next one, then she's got a spear, she's got a club, she's got a dagger. You know, and supposing you can escape all of them, then Prabhupada said, and then there's the lion upon which Durga is riding. The passion of material existence. Karmakanda, Gyanakanda. So, according to Narottam Das Thakur, this is the Vaishnava perspective. Minus, this is emphasis now, minus the perspective of the ultimate purpose of these things, you know, coming closer to Krishna. Absent the coming closer to Krishna, it just serves as further bondage. Elevated bondage, Prabhupada calls it. First class prison cell, as opposed to the other kind. But if someone's in prison, they're in prison. They may have a first class, sometimes, you know, dignitary people that make some crime, they give them a first class prison cell with amenities, whatever those amenities might be, television so they can blow their brains out, and whatever. But it's prison. And so first class prison cell or whatever the prison cell, that it's for a transcendentalist, let us not remain within the prison and think, oh, now I'm in a first-class prison cell. But the purpose of human life, so that's what's being spoken about here, the purpose of human life, if neglected, whatever the position that one may be in the social structure, Vedic social structure, whatever one's position may be, there's a process for elevation, and the process for elevation is not just karmakanda rituals, although gradually, by design, gradually that can, over many, many lifetimes, bring one to the position, if one follows it properly and has proper brahmana to guide. In the age of Kali, there aren't proper brahmanas to guide, so it's not to be done. But supposing all those things that are not to be done, they fall in place, it may bring one to the brahminical position. But still, from the brahminical position, there's the good karma to which one is bound, and ultimately heavenly planets, and then back down again. That's not the Ferris wheel program is not what the Vedas or Bhagavad Gita recommend, ultimately. Ultimately, as Sarvadharma is quoted in the purport, Mame Kam Sharanam. So we just teach Mame Kam Sharanam and the means to do so. Starting with the chanting of the holy name and all the forms of devotional service that come from the chanting of the holy name. And how to do those things, the writings that Prabhupada labored so diligently to provide us with, give us the how-to. How do we live our lives in devotion to Krishna? And then the association of devotees, that this is a big one. We're supposed to model. We're supposed to be examples. Of course, this is, you know, we're not there yet. We're still like trying to get there. But it's a responsibility to get there and to be the examples of for anyone, everyone. Not anyone, everyone is going to be like the brahmacharis living in the brahmachari ashram. Although I'm sure there are a vast number of brahmacharis out there, they just don't know it yet. And we don't know it yet either. But if we can live our lives modeling what the Vedas teach, how brahmacharis conduct, I think we'll have, you know, with the proper communication and outreach and so on, we'll have, you know, more persons that are potentially, and then whatever the ashram, other ashram situations may be there, be examples and teachers of the message. That's the last part of the purport. And then he Prabhupada concludes, if that's neglected from our side or from those who may receive the opportunity and say no, then so their unregulated lives leave an undesirable consequence. So it's for us, it's impetus to, you know, sit straight and do devotional service nicely because we don't like the alternative. Or even better, far better, is compassion, live properly, and like Prahlad Maharaj expresses in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, feeling great distress over the misfortune of those that are misguided. In Kali Yuga, there's no guidance or misguidance. Hardly is there good guidance. And it's a deep concern. As one progresses a little spiritually, compassion is natural quality. And where do we repose that compassion? The method is provided. So according to our capacity, we do. Without neglecting receiving the compassion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the disciplic succession following him, we receive, continue nurturing and receiving, but also administering, sharing that wonderful opportunity with others. At least provide the opportunity for others to take, if they wish. Hare Krishna. So any discussion, questions? Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. One point we were discussing previously is that if one suffers so terribly in these hellish planets, but then they take birth again and they don't have a remembrance, really, of that experience, then where is the benefit for the soul?
The impression is there if you don't remember something. Just take a little simple example. Supposing one is burned in a fire. Supposing one dies being burned in a fire. What's going to happen in the next life? There's going to be fear of fire. Even they don't remember they died in a fire, for example. The impression is there. So for the soul, that was your question. How is the benefit for the soul? The soul gets at least the opportunity to recognize this has its consequence, that has its consequence. And so we're by karma, we're moved by the consequences, but for transcendence, we can understand, I don't want to go there again. There's consequences. Although I may not remember the details of the cause and the effect. Say, you know, the flip side is if we were to remember all of the misdeeds and all the suffering from those misdeeds, Prabhupada explained, we would expire. So forgetfulness is to help us to continue. But in our case, we're on the path of remembrance just by hearing. So we can understand back there, there's all kinds of those things. Whatever the details are, we can't remember. But there's consequences to those things. Yes.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. I have two questions. My first question is on this point about...
A little louder.
My first question is on this point about there may be so many people outside our temple who are interested, who may be interested in Krishna consciousness. We don't know who they are. They might not know who they are. I was thinking for brahmacharis who go out preaching and develop relationships with some of these young men who may not be sure of which ashram they want to join, how should we advise them so they don't feel like we're coercing them into the brahmacharya ashram?
Well,
that's my first question.
You know, it starts with your own heart or your own disposition. And your own disposition is you wish them to take the means of purification because it's purifying. And then your wish is whatever... The lifestyle or standard that's suitable for them, we wish that for them. We're not like steering them this way, that way, ashram-wise. We're steering them, we're encouraging or steering them towards take this purification, take this nectar. See the difference between nectar and poison and take the nectar. And whatever flows from that. Devotional service flows from that, whatever is suitable to the individual. Then there's some details. Some is very clear this is suitable, some is very clear that's suitable, some are on the fence. And then, you know, according to the situation, we then, you know, respond in detail. But the broad picture is take this means of purification. And see the difference between purification and poison. And then let it flow from there, devotional service. Second?
So my second question is on the anecdote you told about the doctor.
A little louder?
The anecdote you told about the doctor.
Yeah.
And yourself. And I was thinking in terms of preaching... we were reading this yesterday in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Mahaprabhu took sannyas because he wanted to, he took Mayavad sannyas because he wanted to preach.
Yeah, yes.
So we were discussing the importance of coming up with, or rather not coming up, but that as time and circumstances change, devotees will introduce novel means of attracting people to Krishna consciousness.
Well, sannyas is not a novelty.
Right.
It's a standard. But... Oh, go ahead.
So I was having this question in my mind that what attracts people to Krishna is the devotee of Krishna. So ultimately, really just, at least the way I was thinking about it was it boils down to the devotee who is doing whatever it is.
Sure.
So what is the balance between the novel presentation and the purity of the Krishna consciousness of the person?
Novelty doesn't go anywhere without purity. So it, how do they compare? Purity is essential. And then by purity, from that position of purity, assuming that's like the priority, then with compassion, how to best touch the heart of someone. I'm thinking now of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who sometimes would dress in African attire when he would come before African people or African-American people. Is relatable to them. And of course, because he was black, wearing African attire, it wasn't, you know, something else. Just anyway, it was genuine. But that he didn't accept that as his identity. So it was to help making... So relevancy and relatable is a question. And just because it's a current topic and a big topic, and a, you know, we could go on for hours on the topic and not reach a conclusion. But when there's purity and principles are not being compromised, then one can, under guidance, with big letters, under guidance, adjust details as an acharya may adjust details but not change principles, in order to allow the audience to relate to the principle message. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yes, sir. Yeah.